We are exploring the Love Wisconsin Project, an initiative of Wisconsin Humanities, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Ken. Thanks for being here. So this is a digital storytelling project that celebrates our state, our lives, and our shared future. Those are the words they use to frame the project. Do you follow Love Wisconsin on Facebook? What do you love about the project and the stories they've unearthed, how they make you feel? Has hearing the story of someone changed your perception of them? 800-642-1234. Jen Rubin is executive producer of Love Wisconsin. Jen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Hi, so what are you trying to do with Love Wisconsin? What's going on here?
Well, so Love Wisconsin is a project of Wisconsin Humanities, and so they bring education and cultural programs to all corners of Wisconsin, and Love Wisconsin is one of them. And so we're trying to help Wisconsinites connect with each other, break down some of the barriers between us, and simply to help all of us meet people we share the state with that we might not otherwise have had a chance to meet.
How did it come about? What was the spark?
So two women, Megan Monday and Jet Weller, founded it, I think like 8 years ago. And I think it was this time of increasing polarization in the state. And everyone was sort of in their own social media silos. So they had this idea of what if we could create this space where people, of diverse political, political beliefs from different corners of the state could sort of be in the same space and read the same stories and meet the same people. And it was remarkably successful. We have more than 100,000 people that engage with us, that follow us on the various social media platforms. And we actually commissioned a study at the UW Center for Communication and Civic Renewal to see, with this thing we set out to do, is it really happening? Are we being successful? And found that actually we are very successful. People, we knew they were interacting with the stories at a very high rate, but now sort of data sort of showing that people are increasing their empathy and increasing their understanding of people with different life experiences.
Well, that's interesting because I, when I think of Facebook, I don't exactly think of empathy. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. No, they were super surprised. They were like, they sort of bolded this in the report that there is this absence of negativity, which was very unusual for Facebook, and that there was this element of community building. And they were very, we have never seen this before.
You are a super longtime storyteller. What makes a good story?
I think we all know stories that we love, the raw materials are there, really interesting things happen. But I think stories that any of us remember that stick with us, there's some thread of universality through it. Like a story that sort of shows an emotion that we all have, that's something we can connect with, even though this thing never happened to me or I never did that, I have felt that, And so I think a story that, takes someone's words and experiences, but sort of makes sure, you sort of show that more universal thread that, we've all felt anger, we've all felt fear, we've all felt joy. I think that kind of thing is what really makes a story stick with us.
There's this mantra from The Moth, and I know you're involved in The Moth, and it's your story, your struggles. And I really like that because to me, the tension has to be there, but your involvement in the events as they unfold are really essential.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think The Moth also has this thing that I really value, and I do storytelling workshops and, share this a lot, which is that you should tell stories from your scars and not your wounds. Because I think it's easier for someone to listen to or read or absorb something difficult that, doesn't, it's still not very raw, so we all have a little perspective to kind of think a little more deeply about that.
And before we go on here, I'm really curious, and I know you co-produced The Moth Madison, and how moth stories are told, they're not read, and how, they want the storyteller to connect with the audience where there isn't a page or a paper between them. And I'm wondering how you feel about that, whether you find it's different for a storyteller to read something to you versus to tell you directly.
Yeah, so I think, it's interesting for me sort of doing The Moth and in-person live storytelling things and then doing Love Wisconsin, right? Because the Love Wisconsin, we are reading what someone's words, but it still has that same feel to it, because what we do with Love Wisconsin is we'll interview someone, and so we'll get their interview transcribed. So it's their actual words, right? Yeah. And then we kind of shape their words into a story arc. So it still has that. I think that's a similarity because it has a very sort of live present feeling. But I think thinking about the moth or doing live storytelling, I think anyone who's ever heard someone tell a story, you can tell the difference as to whether someone's just sort of telling it and in the moment and thinking about it as they're doing it versus if they're reading it. Because there's a different level of engagement, and there's just a little different level of being in the story. And as, I can't quite describe it, but if you should come to the moth sometime, and you'll be able to tell the difference.
I'm going to reintroduce you. We're talking with veteran storyteller and executive producer of Love Wisconsin. Jen Rubin is here, and you can join in with your questions. And how has hearing the personal story of someone changed your life? Are you familiar with Love Wisconsin on Facebook and follow these stories? 800-642-1234. So you started creating this mini series of people with similar jobs or similar characteristics as a way to connect people. Can you tell us about this mini series and what it is like to be a poll worker?
Yeah, so I started, you know, so when I started at Wisconsin, the whole idea of, you know, I loved the whole idea of Love Wisconsin. And so, you know, I feel like whether you look at a poll worker or a municipal worker or a musician, the idea of like, let's find someone from different corners of the state, you know, the five or six people, and sort of tell their stories and just sort of show how things are similar and things are different in a city or a small town. But the first one I did was poll worker because we were heading into the 2020 election. You know, there's a lot of mistrust with the election process, how votes are counted, all of that. And as a longtime poll worker myself, I thought it could be valuable to feature 10 poll workers from different corners of the state just to show who are these people that, you know, step up and volunteer. And through their stories, I was hoping to show the safeguards that are in place and how counting votes actually happens. So, for example, we had Juby Simonson from a town of 600 in Walwick. And, you know, she knew everyone. She gives out cookies. You know, and then there was Leanne White from Lac du Flambeau, who, you know, wants tribal members to see a friendly face when they come in to vote, since it wasn't always such a welcoming place, and so on, you know, eight other people, and, you know, each one showing how it plays out very differently in their communities, but also through their stories showing, like I said, sort of there are safeguards in place in terms of how our voting happens and how it's counted.
Well, why don't you share an excerpt of Juby's story that you can read for us?
Sure. So in the beginning of the story, you know, we talk about how she makes cookies for everyone and the real sort of, you know, small town feel of it. But I really like, well, I'll just read this whole thing, but I really like the last sentence. So she says, although we only have about 300 registered voters in the whole township, in 2016, we had nearly 90% of those voters vote. I was proud to live in such an engaged township. I don't keep track of voting percentages for other townships, but I'm always encouraging our township to say, hey, we had 3% more turnout than X township, just to have fun, keep people on their toes, and send the message that voting is important. I'm a firm believer that an informed, involved electorate is the key to democracy. I just firmly believe that I don't have to like your politics, but it is important to me that you vote.
I just firmly believe that I don't have to like your politics, but it is important to me that you vote. And that line in particular really stuck with you.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that's, you know, that's at the heart of being a poll worker and sort of how, you know, the machinery of our democracy works.
Well, in our last couple seconds here, what's next for Love Wisconsin? Where are you taking it?
Well, you know, we're continuing to you know, put out stories and gather stories. I'm actually particularly interested right now. I'm going to feature a story of someone who is a Holocaust survivor, someone who's a child of a Holocaust survivor who volunteers in schools to teach the Holocaust, and then someone whose profession is to teach the Holocaust in schools. It seems like it's a good time for these stories.
Well, Jen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jen Rubin, executive producer of Love Wisconsin, and we have a link to Love Wisconsin at WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, we talk with another candidate vying to be Milwaukee's next mayor. We hear from Aisha Griffin. What challenges and opportunities do you want the next mayor to act on? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking with candidates in the race to become Milwaukee's next mayor here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seven candidates are on the ballot in the nonpartisan primary election on Tuesday. That's this Tuesday. The top two advance to the spring election April 5th. What do you think Milwaukee's next mayor should prioritize? What are the city's biggest challenges and opportunities? 800-642-1234. Aisha Griffin is a community activist. Aisha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's kick this off with your top priorities for the city. What are they?
First and foremost, our priorities are the people, you know, I guess in a nutshell, because there's so many different things going on. I guess if I had to summarize it, it'll be the people, the services, and a zero tolerance for discrimination, trying to eradicate this discrimination that's kind of kept Milwaukee back for a minimum of 17 years.
I want to touch first on that discrimination, because in 2019, Milwaukee County passed a resolution declaring racism a public health crisis. And in the city, how would you take action to tackle inequality, to tackle discrimination?
Right. That resolution is just for show, because after that resolution, nothing has been done to show that that resolution really had any powerful meaning, you know, any substance in it. Contrary to the other opponents and those that are already in office, I will be meeting firsthand on a regular basis with the community. I will have regular meetings with every head department of every agency in the city of Milwaukee. I will do pop-ups with different agencies. I will definitely have my Aisha for the People plan effectuated, which has TCB committees, taking care of business committees, to make sure that we constantly look at where the government is failing the people so that we can enact things, enforce things, and regulate things, you know, in a timely manner.
Ooh, you're breaking up there for just a moment. Oh, and I think we just lost our connection with Aisha Griffin as we talk about our who will be the next mayor of Milwaukee. We've been doing this series, and Aisha Griffin is a community activist and candidate for Milwaukee's mayor on Tuesday's primary election ballot. And over the past weeks, we have interviewed all seven. This is the seventh candidate that we're interviewing on the nonpartisan primary ballot. There's a whole collection of these Q&As that we've been doing here, and you can check it out. We have a link at WPR.org/mornings as we get Aisha back on the phone. Aisha, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, hopefully this is a better connection. I want to take you back to the TCBs you're talking about, taking care of business. What are these?
Yes. My taking care of business committees will be certain people that will have the task force, and which I will be included in, of making sure that we have solutions and not just statements and press releases to the community giving bare-bone analysis of different things without having a solution to the issues. It would also include looking at where the government is failing the people so that we can enact different things of that nature, regulations, and enforce different laws that are already on the books. Also, like I said, I will meet regularly with every head department in the agency and also do my own pop-ups within the agency. I'll have regular calendar constituent service days, face-to-face meetings with the community to see how they feel, what's going on, what do we need to address, because it's really the people's seat. We're representing the people. It's not a seat we can just sit in once you're in office. You know, that's what's going on with these opponents. Every opponent, even the outsider, quote-unquote outsider, Michael Sampson, which he called himself yesterday, have a personal agenda. You know, I stated before to several people, I don't even know how Bob Donovan is even on the ballot, because this man has a conviction in federal court, which the Wisconsin Constitution, meaning the people of...
And Aisha, you're breaking up again, but I want to just pause here, because it sounds like regulation is important to you, enforcement important, We're hearing about transparency in government and communication at all levels as we try to get Aisha Griffin back on the line here, but bringing up a number of things in terms of communicating at all levels of government, mentioned the taking care of business committees and really putting people first, services first, and trying to root out discrimination. You can join in with questions you have about the mayoral candidates on the ballot. What you think Milwaukee's next mayor should prioritize? Do you think Milwaukee government is listening to you and your needs? 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. As we have this mayoral series and trying to get Aisha Griffin back on the line, we've had some difficulty with her phone line this morning, a community activist on Tuesday's primary ballot. And over the past couple weeks, if you've been following, we've interviewed all seven candidates on the nonpartisan primary ballot that is set for Tuesday. And we have a whole collection of these Q&As. You can check them out at WPR.org/mornings. And we've talked with these candidates about a range of issues, from financing in the city, what will happen with the pensions, what will happen with housing and making more affordable housing, what to do about reducing violence and reckless driving in the city, and addressing the homicide, the second year of record-setting homicide. 800-642-1234 is the number. Aisha, are you back on the line?
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't happen.
Okay,
again.
Well, hopefully we can get a solid line here. I want to move on to, how do you reduce violence and reckless driving in Milwaukee?
Okay.
Yes, what is your approach there?
As it relates to violence and reckless driving, I think that the community is being disturbed because there is a false projection being put out as if violence is only about homicide, when homicide is the lowest form of gun violence. Actually, suicide is the highest form of gun violence, but the highest form of violence overall is rape and sexual assault. And this is something that my opponents do not want to touch. And for whatever reason, I'm not sure. But as it relates to that, I have my Aisha for the People plan, where I'm looking at resources to stop certain homicides. Because a lot of the homicides are based on desperation, poor decision making, and different things of that nature. It's something, and it is the lowest form of violence, but it's still violence. And so I think that if we had the necessary resources, for instance, you had a Burger King robbery where these young people were desperate to pretend as if they're robbing something out of desperation for money. It wasn't even a real robbery. It was something that was put together. It was illogical thinking, and it resulted in the loss of life. But the person who accidentally took that life didn't know about the, my understanding about the robbery, and now he's being charged, but he's being crucified because he's a felon.
So how, when you say desperation, how would you address poverty in Milwaukee and those basic needs, basic resources?
Well, the American Rescue Plan, for one, is a lot of the current acting mayor is misallocating those funds. Those funds are specifically to rescue the Americans and the American within Milwaukee. One of the reasons the funds are there is to relieve the poverty, or tempers to relieve the poverty of children, which are the highest people, even though the children in poverty, and then the woman, you know, and so we have funds, we have resources. We also can collaborate with different entities. My opponents are making this assumption that they're forced to fight with the state, and it's not true, because the state is the mother, basically, of the city. The city is only a creation of the state. You have to work with the state. You know, also federal funds. We have Chicago has a toll, where they bring in revenue off a toll. Milwaukee doesn't have a toll. There's so many different things that we can do. I'm saying public officials that can take the burden off people. One of the things I stated that I would do if elected mayor is to do a complete audit to see where the wasteful spending has gone. We have billions of dollars that can be saved every year in regards to revenue if we identify where the wasteful spending is going. You know, so those would be some of the things that I would look into as it relates to reducing the poverty and the homicide.
And very quickly, I want to squeeze in one more topic. What would you do about creating more affordable housing?
In my Aisha for the People Plan, I have something called MENDES, Major Economic Neighborhood Development Under Supervision. I will bring the community to the table, and we could discuss different things like the dollar houses just sitting there. The city has stronghold of. We can teach them how to be homeowners and donate some of them abandoned homes to help people be homeowners, because in Milwaukee, Black people are the lowest homeowners in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many homeowners, so we have renters. And in my issue for the people that have rentervention, where we try to stop these evictions based off of slum lords, retaliation and different things of that nature, trying to have vouchers where they don't have to be removed from their homes and different things of that nature as well. And so I have a plethora of ideas. We have more issues than this, what they try to put in a nutshell.
Well, Aisha, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Aisha Griffin, community activist, candidate for Milwaukee mayor in Tuesday's primary election. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with more on an Olympian from Pulaski who had the race of her life this week. I watched it. It was phenomenal.
If you're competing in the biathlon at the Olympics, you have to be really good at not just one, but two sports, Nordic skiing and rifle shooting. Biathlete Deidre Irwin explains.
You skate ski with a modified 22 long rifle that you carry on your back, and you stop on a range and you shoot the targets and hopefully hit them all so you don't have to do any penalty laps.
Irwin is making her Olympic debut as one of eight members of USA's biathlon team. She's also one of three biathletes with Wisconsin ties. Back in high school, the Pulaski native joined the Ashwaubenon Nordic ski team to supplement her running habit. She skied competitively in college, where her friend and current teammate encouraged her to try biathlon. She got hooked, and in addition to being an Olympian, she is also a Vermont National Guard biathlete. I recently talked with Irwin via Zoom while she was in Italy, where her team had just competed in the BMW IBU World Cup.
Good shooting from Didier Irwin.
USA's women's relay team placed fifth, which is the best finish they've had in decades.
What a great day for the American team, 50 seconds behind. I think that was Joanne Reed screaming with joy there as she crossed the line.
I was crying at the end of the relay last weekend, just like so excited, because last year we had a sixth place and we all were like, holy crap, that's crazy. And this year now we have a fifth, and it just sort of sees this progression that our team is able to compete at such a high level throughout the world, even though our sport maybe isn't the most popular in the U.S.
So why do you love competing in biathlon?
One of the reasons that I was really drawn to biathlon was just the passion of all of the administrators I had met and the coaches and the athletes. And then when I actually got to compete internationally at one of my first World Cups, I like walk through this tunnel and then all of a sudden I look over and there's just like 30,000 fans just like screaming and like partying. And it was like being in a football stadium back in Wisconsin. And I'm just like, they're here for us. You know, it was just such a cool thing to experience and see. And then it's also just so challenging. On any day, anybody can clean a race and place so much higher than they normally do.
It's also interesting to me that biathlon has only been in the Olympics for a few decades, because to me, it seems like one of the more practical winter sports. Like at its core, it's extreme survival skills. You ski fast and you shoot.
Yeah. And I think that's why, like, for me, it can be part of the military, because it is a military training exercise. That's kind of how it got developed from the Norwegian army to become such a hit. I mean, I think it's the most watched winter sport in Europe.
Can you talk about how you approach a race? It's fascinating to watch how you find that balance between really exerting yourself and racing fast, but not overexerting yourself. Like if you're exhausted, I assume that throws off your shooting.
And that in there lies the question. How do you do that? Because for me, I'm still figuring it out. Every year I've kind of gotten a little bit faster at skiing. And I've noticed that if I do that too much, you're right, I come into the range and I'm a little too breathing too heavy. The barrel's moving a lot more. I can't really get it in sight. So that's really the name of the game, how to balance being efficient and fast in skiing and being able to flip that switch when you get to the range and become a focused precision shooter.
What are your goals with these winter games?
First step was obviously just making it. And since then, I've been able to kind of think about, you know, what kind of realistic goals I can have. So I don't really expect myself to be podiuming or anything in individual events unless something really crazy happens. But I really want to focus on the relays. And I think that our relays are just getting better and better. And I really believe in this group of the four women we have here. And I think we can really pull together something magical.
Deidre Irwin is a member of the USA's biathlon team and a Pulaski, Wisconsin native. She'll be competing in at least three races at the Olympic Games in Beijing. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now we check in on Wisconsin athletes competing in the games. Were you not swelling up with pride at the sight of curler John Schuster carrying the flag into the bird's nest for the opening ceremonies and then cutting to a shot of his family cheering him on in Superior? And then his son, so proud of his dad, he performed a mock ceremony in his classroom announcing the news of his dad flag bearer for his third grade classmates. I mean, the video is priceless. These Olympic moments, the human connection, it gets me every time. Are you following the Wisconsin athletes at the games? Who's your favorite story? 800-642-1234. Diane Bazooka is the Lee Ester News Fellowship reporter for WPR. Been following the athletes with ties to Wisconsin. Diane, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, I've been waiting for this all week. I am sleep deprived. I'm Olympics punchy, and I just want to watch one more event. I'm a Mike Tirico bestie every night on the couch, and so this is going to be really fun. And so I like try to absorb all the factoids, and you know, my family is really sick of it. My coworkers are very polite, but so I'll be like, Diane, do you know what university has the most Team USA athletes represented at these games and why? And you're like, no, I didn't sign up for this. And here's a hint. It's not the UW, but it's very close to us. And sometimes it's our rival, and it's sometimes it is our bestie.
Oh, no. It's not the Gophers, is it?
Mm-hmm. You got it. You got it. University of Minnesota. And here's the why. Here's the why. It's hockey. U of M's Olympic roster is boosted by hockey. So, fun factoid this morning. So, give us an update. Start with a count of Team USA medals in the game so far. Where are we at?
As of this morning, we are at 10. We've got 4 golds, 5 silvers, and 1 bronze. So, okay. Looking good.
How are the Wisconsin athletes looking in the medals?
Good. We have none yet, but maybe curling, hockey, I don't know.
Okay. So, and you've been tracking these more than 20 Olympic athletes at this year's games. What sports are Wisconsin athletes competing in this year?
We have a lot. We've got curling, hockey, biathlon, as you just heard with Deidre Irwin, cross-country skiing, Nordic combined, speed skating, ski jumping, and snowboarding. So 8 sports.
Wow, that's so cool. And so I was trying to do a little check off here. So Team USA as a whole is competing in 107 events. Here's another more of my Tirico factoids. 107 events across 15 disciplines in the 7 Winter Olympic sports, which are biathlon, bobsledding, curling, ice hockey, luge, skating, and skiing. So maybe the answer is luge and bobsledding that are the only winter sports where Wisconsin doesn't have an athlete. I mean, this is where callers call in and set the record straight and then be like, you know, Kate, that bobsledder from Austria, his mother lives in Milwaukee. I don't know, but it seems like we have some pretty good representation here.
We do. Yeah. I was really impressed when I started looking into this further.
So what is Nordic combined?
It is a very interesting sport that combines ski jumping and cross-country skiing. So the competitors will first participate in a regular ski jump, and the order in which they finish determines their seeding for the cross country race. So they have to, like biathlon, they have to be really good at two sports.
Well, let's go to another somewhat quirky sport, but curling has this really quiet, lovely fan base. It's crazy competitive. What is the news out of curling with Wisconsin athletes?
We have four Wisconsin athletes on the curling teams, two on the men's team. As you mentioned, John Schuster, also the flag bearer for the United States, and then Matt Hamilton. So the men's team is looking strong. They're currently 2-1. So they beat Russia. They lost to Sweden, which is the team they defeated to win the gold medal in 2018. And then they had a great comeback last night, defeating Great Britain. And they'll play again tonight at midnight against Norway. So they're looking really good, potentially aiming to repeat their gold medal performance.
And here's the thing with curling, it's on the schedule, I noticed, like nearly every day of the game. So you can kind of float in and out of it.
Yes, absolutely. Lots of games. They start with a great big round robin competition where they play every other team in the competition, which they're still doing now. And then the top teams will advance to the next round.
And did you know the Duluth Curling Club is one of the oldest, largest, and most accomplished curling clubs in the U.S. and home to Team Schuster? And my question is, maybe it should be renamed the Superior Curling Club.
It might, although there is a Superior Curling
Club. Oh, my gosh, there is?
Yes. I spoke with someone there this week. And I'm not sure if they're rivals or friends, maybe a little bit of both.
Oh my gosh, the Twin Port Rivalry Curling Clubs. That's interesting. I'm not going to get in the middle of those shenanigans, I swear.
Oh, me either.
So, all right. And what about the women? What can you tell us about the women curlers?
Well, the women also have two Wisconsinites on the team. Throwing second is Becca Hamilton, which is, as many people know, Matt Hamilton's sister. And then her teammate, Nina Roth, is also on the team. Both of them are returning Olympians, both from McFarland. And the team is looking really strong this year. They're currently 3-0. They have defeated Russia, Denmark, and China. And then they'll play again on tomorrow morning around 6 a.m. against Great Britain. So they're looking really, really strong. The women have never medaled in curling for the United States, but this could be their year.
Oh, I love it. And so you got this curling stone, and the players are helping it glide naturally and effortlessly down the ice. And there's this very special broom. And then I'm really not up on the scoring, but how do you go about watching curling?
I find it really, really interesting. I've never watched as much curling as I have this year, but they mic the players.
Huh.
So you can actually listen to their strategies. I don't know that they do this in any other sport, but you can hear the players talking to each other and deciding how they want to strategize each shot, how much they want to sweep to get the stones to go further. And so you can learn quite a bit about the sport and the gameplay just by watching TV.
Oh, that's really interesting. WPR is Diane Bazooka getting us up to speed on Wisconsin's presence in the Winter Olympics. There are 224 Team USA athletes, more than 20 with ties to the Badger State, maybe more. You might know of more connections. How do you consume the Olympics? Do you have memories of an Olympian from Wisconsin you want to talk about? Share your Wisconsin Olympic connections and who you're rooting for in Beijing. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Diane Bazooka here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're checking in with WPR's Diane Bazooka, who has been following the Wisconsin athletes at the Winter Games from afar. My heart melted when I saw the social media post Anna Hoffman's dad did of his ski jumping daughter from Madison. And he said she started ski jumping at 2 years old, While the journey has had its many ups and downs, she stayed focused. And even when those around her thought it was not possible, she continued to believe. And he said, I have a lot to learn from her grit and determination. Go, Anna, have one. Isn't that beautiful from father to daughter? Oh, share your Winter Olympic moments, 800-642-1234. WPR's Diane Bazuka with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's just take a moment for that Anna Hoffman story. I mean, didn't know she was going to be there at the Games. What happened with her?
Yeah, this was a really exciting story. So the U.S. women's ski jumping team didn't have enough international competition this year, largely because of COVID canceling some of those matches. And so they didn't have enough international points to qualify for the Olympics, but Anna had performed really well at the Olympic trials. She actually won the trials. And so through the very complicated process of determining Olympic quota spots, there were extra spots allocated when some nations didn't use all of theirs. And so come January, just weeks before the Olympics, when those spots became available, Anna was thrilled to be added as the lone woman ski jumper for Team USA.
Oh, that's such a great story. And, you know, it's not about how she placed because it wasn't high or anything, but it's just about that persistence and just going with the flow, I would imagine.
Yeah. I spoke with her mom and with former coaches, and she is just really a tenacious athlete. And she, you know, she went first. She had the number one bib. And so it's a tough position to jump first. I'm hearing from you know, social media, it's been really cold. So it was not easy conditions. It was her first Olympics, but just to be out there as a 21-year-old competing was really, really impressive.
Do you think we might see more of her in the future?
Absolutely. You know, what I'm hearing from her coach at Blackhawk is that she has just this tremendous self-awareness and body awareness in the air, so that after a jump, you know, she'll immediately get off the hill and already be analyzing, you know, oh, I wasn't in this position, or I needed to adjust this. And her coach was like, I don't even have to tell her anything. She just coaches herself. So he is like really expecting to see more from her in the future, and said that we might even see her jumping off of the large hill if they add that for women in the 2026 games. Right now, women just jump off of the 90-meter normal hill, but maybe we'll see that large hill in the future. And he calls Anna a great flyer. He says, you're just going to see her fly off that larger jump.
Oh, wow. I love it. Something to watch for. Let's move on to women's hockey, another sport with a really long and storied history for Olympic athletes. What have we seen so far out of Wisconsin athletes?
A lot. We have quite a few players on the team, either past, present, or future Badgers, as well as just Madison natives. The team is currently 4-1. They're looking really, really strong and headed hopefully to that gold medal game again. Hillary Knight is really one of the leaders of the team. She's a four-time Olympian. She's scored 4 goals in the game so far, and she was a Badger, a UW Badger from 2007 to 2012, and is their all-time leading scorer. So she is really a clutch member of the team. She's joined by Alex Cavallini, who is goalkeeper, and was also a member of the Badgers from 2010 to 2014. Holds records there for career games, wins, and saves. It's her first Olympics, but she is another great addition. Amanda Kessel, not a Badger. She was actually a Gopher. But she is.
I was going to see if you're going to keep the record straight there or not. So keep me honest.
Yeah. she's a 3-time Olympian, so bringing that experience to the team. And then the list keeps going on. Abby Rock, a former Badger, the first Indigenous player to be on the USA hockey roster, has been looking really strong on the ice. And then a newcomer, Caroline Harvey, a 19-year-old who was ready to join the Badgers. She had signed when she got called up by Team USA to join the team. So she deferred for a year and will be joining the Badgers next year.
Ooh, so there is so much Wisconsin and Minnesota in the mix on this team. That is so cool. Very cool. You know, and I've been kind of taking a peek this morning, the women, everyone close your ears if you're going to watch the game, but held off the Czech Republic in a quarterfinal game. And the New York Times, you know, it's reporting that the Czech Republic, which is appearing in its first Olympic women's hockey tournament, they menaced the U.S. And so I'm wondering what do future games hold here?
I don't know. It's been, you know, kind of an unpredictable Olympics. You know, in the very first game, we lost one of our best players in Brianna Decker when she injured her leg. And then she was set to be replaced by another former Badger, Britta Curl, who then last minute couldn't attend because she tested positive for COVID. You know, we started out strong. The women had a loss to Canada, but we will most likely be seeing them again. So it's been up and down, but I think what I'm hearing from people is resiliency. This, you know, is something this team's been showing, and that's exactly what you need to stick it out through Olympic play to the final round.
I agree. I mean, dropping one to Canada, that's not the worst thing. Just be resilient. Just keep going on to that next game. Absolutely. All right. So speed skater, Kewaskum teenager Jordan Stoltz, what can you tell us there?
Oh, this guy's really impressive. He literally burst onto the scene recently. He's 17, started skating in his backyard when he was five. And practiced relentlessly, you know, watching footage of himself and other skaters, training, cycling. He trains at the Pettit National Ice Center in Milwaukee.
Sweet.
Yes. And in the, you know, was an up and coming skater, certainly doing well, getting attention from folks, but not out in the front until the Olympic trials, where at Pettit, he set track records. Wow. In the 500 meter and the 1000 meter. A lot of people are chalking it up to some intensive training he did during the pandemic and then a growth spurt he had. You know, he's still only 17, but he is now suddenly a medal contender. He does hold junior world records in those two events. So it's not completely surprising, but it's really exciting to see this young skater, you know, performing so well already early in his career.
And speaking of early, I think it's 2:45 in the morning, our time tomorrow morning, that he's got a 500 meter race.
Yes. That's kicking off this week. And then that follow a 1000 meter, I think later in the week, next week.
Oh, Diane, thank you so much for joining us. Happy Olympics.
You as well. Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
Diane Bazooka, the Lee Ester News Fellowship reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, updating the performance of Wisconsin Olympians in Beijing throughout the Winter Games. You can find her work, of course, at WPR.org. Just ahead, we open up the lines. Want to hear from you. It's a caller-only hour. What topics should we bring to the morning show? Which guests should we book? What are some issues you're facing that you want us to explore on the air together in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. All ideas welcome. What's on your mind? Email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.